Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. And today we're going to talk about my gym relocation process and what all that has entailed. So if you've not known over the past couple of years, my wife and I found out that we were going to having to be relocating our gym due to eminent domain. And to give you just a very brief background about just our gym and this whole process, we currently were at the initial location that we were at for a little over 7 years. So we opened technically in June of 2018, and we have done business in that space ever since, right? It was our kind of a dream scenario, really. We got access to almost 6,500 square foot of space at a cheap rate. The space had never been leased or rented before prior. The landlords had to do some upgrades on their end to make things meet, but it ended up being a great space for us to start working out of. And I have a whole article over on Elite FTS about the process of starting Thirst and our gym and how we really not only kind of lucked out in terms of the space and it working, but how it was essentially a dream of mine in terms of the strength and conditioning side of being able to open my own facility, even though initially I wanted to be in like the college realms or the high school realms or, you know, maybe even the pro realms. But at the end of the day, I decided that being a private facility was going to be what was going to be best for my long-term career if I could ever make it happen. And we did happen to obviously make that happen 7 years later here talking about it. And I will say that my powerlifting career probably helped catapult that facility. And then also my years of personal training and being involved in strength and conditioning for some capacity from graduating in 2011 until that gym opening in 2018. So we're talking 7 years of doing something in the fitness, strength and conditioning, powerlifting world to be able to make this happen. So it is a very hard upward battle to make happen, especially if it's all self-funded. You're not going to franchise. You're not going to have investors, anything like that. This was all self-funded out of our own pocket or my own pocket before I met my wife. And again, going back to that initial space, anybody that has been in the, what I will call for this lack of a better term, Thirst 1.0 in Terre Haute, Indiana, you know the problems and issues that this facility had. It had leaky roofs and ceilings all the time. Landlords could never get it fixed, or they just didn't care to get it fixed. In terms of the bathroom situation, they did not actually build a second bathroom like they were supposed to from a code perspective. That ended up catching up to us at one point, which clearly my landlords were responsible for in terms of ultimately doing, because it was their property. It was not my build-out responsibility. It was at minimum supposed to meet code, and due to the square footage, there was not enough bathroom space. And then there were just some other things along the way that got to be headaches. But really, this building was just old and decrepit. It was built in the 40s. It had been used for multiple different things. It had seen multiple tenants go through it. There were actually three separate parts plus a basement. As I mentioned, my space was the first time it had ever been rented out or leased out. But the other sides have had several tenants, and many of them had failed or moved on or had issues. And it seems like the writing was probably on the wall, but as a young business, we were willing to do whatever we could to try to stay in that space. Because again, like I mentioned, the price was amazing. I don't think we'll ever find a price for that square footage ever again. And it was a triple net lease as well. So if you don't know what that means, essentially it means as a business owner for me, I'm responsible for the rent, the taxes, and the insurance side of my portion of the bill to be able to cover my business. Now, I don't have to insure the building, but I have to be able to ensure not only my contents, but obviously any liability being a gym and how that all works. So that's what the triple net lease meant of it. So while my rent stayed pretty flat the entire time, taxes obviously go up over time. So essentially our rent would go up at the same rate that tax went up. And I saw our taxes go up quite a bit over those 7 years. Fast forward to 2022, I believe it was around May timeframe. My wife and I got a phone call from an individual I had no idea, from the state of Indiana, letting us know that Eminent Domain was going to take this property. And so I'm just going to give you a brief explanation of what Eminent Domain is first. An Eminent Domain, if you are unfamiliar, essentially means that the government in some capacity, whether it be local, state, or maybe even federal, is going to acquire your property. You have no option. They will be taking it. There will be a negotiation aspect of how that property is taken, but you will no longer own that location or that property. Now, as a tenant, you know, it's not my property, so it's not being taken from me, but obviously as a tenant, what the government is going to do with that property is, you know, who knows? They can take it for several reasons, really unlimited reasons, as long as they have a justified reason that they're going to use it for public better good, essentially. And what we discovered was that they were going to build an overpass near the intersection that we're at. So we're probably about a blockish away from the intersection, even though I'm technically across street. We're about a block and a half away from a major intersection. And that intersection actually happens to have a railroad track go through both the east and the south side of that intersection. So it can get stopped at both sides of that intersection, both the east and the south. And a big issue with this is that it really hinders traffic being able to clearly move anywhere around the intersection. But also, if you go further down to the west and try to go over the tracks, you're probably going to get caught by it. And the same thing, if you happen to go north and east, you're going to get caught by the same track. So really avoiding this train is nearly impossible. And this is probably one of the most high volume train tracks in Terre Haute, Indiana. And if you've never been to Terre Haute, Indiana, we have a lot of train tracks just in general because of the way the town was, you know, developed decades, if not, you know, over 100 plus years ago. And so trains were very big in the Terre Haute area way back in the day. Anyways, they were trying to figure out how they can get over this train track so they can leave it there, because the railroad system is part of the federal government and the community was having issues with not only the traffic, but there's also a hospital to the west, maybe about a third to half a mile at the absolute most. And so there were issues where, from what I was told, are that there were patients in ambulances being railroaded from getting to emergency rooms and getting to the hospital. And that's something you never want to hear about, right? You don't want to hear about somebody's livelihood or family member or anything of that nature being postponed because of a railroad. And not only just a train being on the railroad track, this railroad track is notorious for having trains stop, and not only just for like a minute or two. I have seen trains stop there for 20 to 30 minutes several times throughout the year. I mean, this is a big issue in this particular intersection and railroad aspect that goes through the intersection. And so the city was essentially trying to get an overpass built, and the state clearly has to approve that, as well as obviously the city. And then the federal government also gets involved as well because of the railroad tracks. Well, they were wanting to make this major project, and to be able to go over the railroad track, they were going to build an elevated double roundabout. So essentially you get to any direction from the roundabouts to be able to go whatever direction you needed and always be able to avoid a train. The train would always go underneath the road, and part of the exit aspect of that double roundabout that's elevated needs the property that my building sits on, or we were renting that building sits on. And the way Eminent Domain works, at least in this case, or my understanding, is that even if they need a piece of the parcel, especially if there is a structure on it, they, from my understanding, from what I was told, at least in Indiana, they will just take the entire structure down. They're not going to try to renovate it or anything else. It is just easier for them to ask everyone to leave. We're going to acquire that parcel of land. We're going to knock everything down. And then things can potentially build up around it after the fact. Well, with this building being over 80 years old, I think it's probably a wise decision. I would not try to repurpose that building myself if I was in that case. But what this means for me and my wife as a tenant is that our business is going to be forced to relocate. And essentially, when I got that phone call in 2022, that is what happened. And from what I was told, again, I'm going to go through more of these details later, but that we were going to have a pretty short time frame of being able to not only get out of our current location, but to get into a new location. And this started a bit of a frenzy for me and my wife because we were thinking, we were not anticipating having to relocate our business. We're renting. We've got to be able to try and find something that's in that 5,000-6,000 square foot range, open space, you know, open floor plan. It doesn't need to be highly commercialized. It needs to clearly have high enough ceilings. It needs to have concrete floors. It needs to be able to have multiple restrooms, right? There are several things that we needed as a business to be able to operate ideally and be able to find a space like that without having to move anywhere too crazy. I mean, you know, you want to move as far, you know, the least amount as possible from your current location, especially if the location is working well, or if you can get a better location from a visibility standpoint, even though that doesn't necessarily benefit our business a whole lot, considering we are a destination-based business, not relying on drive-by traffic to get people to stop in. But this began to start a little bit of a frenzy for me and my wife, and we immediately called our real estate agent who helped us buy our house, a semi-close family friend, and he started immediately kind of putting his boots to the ground and trying to find some space for us, whether it be to rent again or to be able to potentially own. And we didn't really know what we could afford. I had never been through this process before. So we were not against trying to purchase a property. But at that time, the first thought process is if we have to rent, that's what we're probably going to do. But if we get the opportunity to purchase, then that's also something that we would want to explore as well. So that was 3.5 years ago that I got that phone call from the date of this recording. And so you can see that this has been kind of a long process considering it's taken this long. And generally speaking, again, from what I've been told, that is not normal for it to take 3.5 years. Usually, I think if I remember correctly on the phone call that I had, they were anticipating a year at the absolute most. So the development and project acquiring that property kept getting pushed back. And it's really frustrating for us trying to find something because we are also provided entitlements, right? It's clearly not our fault that we're having to move. So as such, the government provides us some entitlements as being asked to leave. And essentially they're trying to unburden us as much as possible during this and incentivize us to move relatively quickly and still try to wish us success, right? As much as I could go on a tangent about this, if they really wanted us to succeed, they shouldn't be able to take anybody's property. But the way that it's basically worded is that this is for the greater good of the community. And given the circumstances, I can't say that I disagree with that statement in this particular case. It's not that they just want the land to have the land. So the notice time frame initially was about a year. Okay, we were thinking it probably wouldn't even be that. They thought, again, this was a May conversation that was had. It was estimated that the bid on the project would happen that fall, so about 6 to 8 months later, and then that the actual process of being, hey, people got to be out, they're knocking stuff down, the project is going to start to move forward in the following year of May of 2023, give or take. That was what we were conveyed initially on. So we also kind of went around a little bit of some legal counsel as well. So during this time, we started looking at some different spaces. In terms of the renting and leasing side, there was not a much out there. If you happen to remember the way the real estate market was around 2022, post-2020 COVID stuff, everything was in a major bubble. Everything. I mean, the interest rates were very low, and so therefore rates or the asking prices of things was very high, rent started to go up. So you could really see that because of the demand of even just houses, but just the demand of people wanting to move or relocate or do things because, again, interest rates were so low that this was making the market very hot. And that is not ideal for somebody that is trying to relocate, and especially when it's not by choice, right? So we found initially a property that the square footage, I believe, was in the 8,000 or 9,000 square foot range. It's been so long. This was around fall of 2022, if I'm not mistaken. And it used to be an old Dollar General, and there were actual rental properties on, or rental structures on the property as well. And so my wife and I were thinking, okay, this could be a very potential win-win. We could not only get a bigger space, but the other spaces we can collect income from, and we can use that to help offset our own rent. And essentially, we could charge ourselves less rent if we can have those both filled. So we're going to get a bigger space for potentially even less money than what we had. So we began to work on that acquisition aspect. And meeting with the sellers, it was clear that this project was going to need some work. The ceilings were not going to be high enough, so it had this pop-out ceilings. Those were all going to have to come out. Ideally, we were going to have to knock down a little bit of a wall. They had left some old camera systems. Everything was kind of raunchy. It really needed some TLC. But there was great parking. Again, the added rental aspect income was going to be a big positive. So we thought, okay, this could be decent. So we kind of ran some numbers, went through the bank. This was going to be something that was going to be in our budget, especially if we could get both sides rented. At the time, one of them was rented and the other one was not. However, the other person that was renting was very honest with us and said, hey, I'm probably going to be out of here in a year. I was planning on moving. And if you're going to repurchase the property, how does that, you know, affect my rent? And so that became some questions. I got to go through this. We had to do an environmental examination. And if you've not dealed with commercial real estate, and I want to be very clear here, I am not a genius when it comes to this. If you happen to be listening to this podcast and think, oh, I know a lot more about this than Brandon does, you probably do. You 100% probably do. But from what we figured out from after the inspection side, and we figured out the big rocks that we had to kick over to get it up to where it was going to be, then we had to perform a phase one environmental exam. And essentially, they look at the history of the property and what it had been used for, and does it pose any risk to the environment from what's been done there? And if there is a potential risk, what is that potential risk? And could that potentially harm the value of the property and or anybody that could be surrounding properties? Really, they're just trying to do their due diligence to take care of the environment and the people that happen to live and consume business and other goods around you. And the phase one came back that they needed to do more research. And by more research, that means more money. Phase one is not cheap by any means, a couple thousand dollars just to get that done. And that is at the buyer's expense. So that's at mine and my wife's expense. Now, we decided to go through with this because part of the perks of the relocation, or I'll say benefits, I guess, is that we get reimbursed up to so much money for anything that we have to do to relocate. So we're thinking, okay, well, we spend this money, we're going to get it back on the back end. It sucks to have to spend that money, but if we're going to get it back, it's essentially going to be free. We're going to do our due diligence. We're going to do what we're supposed to. And you usually have to have those environmental exams to get the loan, the commercial loan from a bank. And they want to make, the bank is doing their due diligence to make sure, again, that things are safe for the community. Well, like I mentioned, that did not come back favorable from a buyer perspective, and said that we're going to need to do a phase two environmental. And the phase two is where they do research on the soil and the land. Now, this is a very costly aspect. This can be anywhere from 15 to 30, even 40, 50 grand from what I was told. It all really depends on a couple things. One, how much sample and soil samples they need to gather, how long that takes. And then if there is an issue, rectifying those issues so that it can then get a stamp of approval that it is okay, and then that the bank can then basically loan, give you the loan on the property, and then they feel better about it. Well, two major issues sparked up with this property. Number one of the rentable structures, at one point, a guy was basically using it as like a car shop. So he was doing some oil changes, transmission stuff, you know, all the fluids that go in cars. There was apparently no evidence or proof that there was proper disposal of any of those fluids. That's an issue because then they assume, okay, well, it's going into the ground. If it's going into the ground, that becomes an environmental issue. It's going to pop up on the soil sample. Number two is that this property was right next to a Marathon Petroleum gas station. And as you know, gas stations have their gas tanks in the ground. And if there happens to be a leak or a seep or anything that can be happening under that ground, which nobody knows about, even the gas station likely doesn't know about it, that could then trickle because of, again, just the way that stuff works and rainfall and everything else, the way that all works, that could then go into our property. And then we, again, are still responsible for at least doing the cleanup aspect of our property. I don't even know what that would entail, if I'm being honest with you. And so me and my wife are looking at this, hey, this is not looking good from a buying perspective. We one, did not have the money to pay for that. And number two, how are we going to, if we could rectify it, is it a property worth having? Thinking long-term about the value of the property and how we're going to use it. And is it someplace that we could see our business thriving for eternity or until we are ready to move on from thirst or gym ownership? And we decided that it was not. So we let the seller know that, hey, this is what the issue is. And this did not happen on our behalf or during our ownership. So we are asking you to pay for the phase two because it's your property. And if you want to sell it to us, and just so you know, anybody else that would happen to go through this process is going to run the same thing unless they pay cash. They get any kind of bank loan or mortgage against the property, they're going to be required to do that. Now, how did this guy get the property? I don't know. You know, there clearly wasn't the car thing on there at that point. That was probably the big red flag that was probably drawing the phase two more than anything else. And this property owner, seller, did not want to do that. Said, I'm not doing it. You're going to take it as is. Okay, well, let's do our due diligence and let's figure out what the property is worth. So we decided to do an appraisal. Let's see what we can get the value of the property at first. And then we can go from there based upon the asking price. Well, the appraisal came back, I think, around 30 or 40 grand underneath the asking price. I mean, it was significantly under the asking price. And if you know, as you go through a mortgage process, the bank will only loan up to that amount at the absolute most. And then clearly you have your down payment, and then that's what the total of your mortgage is. This process became that it was priced at 40,000-ish, 30,000-40,000 over what it was actually worth, at least according to market research. And it was going to need a phase two. And so we go back to the seller and say, hey, this is what it's, we didn't give them the actual value of what it was, but hey, it is not worth what you are asking. So we will only come to you with this much money. So we essentially did tell him the price because we said, this is how much money we'll come up to. We underballed what it appraised at, but he doesn't know that. You know, we want to try to get ourselves a good deal too. He says, there's no way that I'm going to sell it for that. No way. And we're like, well, then we're going to have to move on. Well, he's trying to sell it. So he's trying to wheel and deal a little bit too and asking us to come up, I think, 10 grand from what we offered. We discussed it a little bit, which was going to put us, I believe, around like 5 or 8 grand over what the, you know, the loan would be able to cover, the bank would be able to cover from the mortgage side. And we just decided, you know what, if that's what it's going to be, we're not interested. So then he comes back later and offers us a private sale. And so what this means is that we don't have to deal with a bank. Basically, you're doing a rent-to-own. And essentially what he wanted was a five-year lease that we would essentially rent from him for 5 years. That money that we're renting is basically essentially going into our equity. It's paying down an initial payment. And then after the 5 years, whatever is left of the agreed price that we agreed to sell on the contract, we then owe after 5 years in full. In which case, that mount, we can go to the bank and say, this is what we owe on this property to be able to get out underneath this contract, or we could have moved. But if we went to buy this, this is the asking price that we would, or the agreed upon price that we would have after 5 years. So, you know, we had an amortization table, we were given interest, just like going through a bank, but it's a individual contract based negotiation. And it wasn't actually going to be a bad thing because the interest rate that he was offering us was going to be lower than the bank. And it's still very much like paying equity into it. Granted, it's not our property, but when it comes to buy it, it is. And then the purchase price that we have is going to be lower than what initially was going to be. On top of, you would like to assume that after 5 years, the property value would increase at least to some degree. You would be able to see that rise and you'd be able to build even more equity in on versus off what you paid. So we considered this. So we went to legal counsel and had our attorney look at things. We tweaked the paperwork a little bit to be able to make things a little more safer on our side. Everybody seemed to be relatively happy in agreement until it came to the phase two. And we just said that we were not going to pay for the phase two, especially because we wanted the phase two to know that, hey, if we are going to do this contract, because the plan is for us to then own the property after the 5 years. And so if we don't know what's happened with the phase two and then we pay this amount, again, we're going to be back in that same position from a bank perspective, as the bank wants that phase two to be able to give us a loan on the property. And again, he did not want to have any financial responsibility for that. And that's basically where we stopped having negotiations and we let it just go away. So that was the first process of trying to acquire a new piece of property that did not go through. And looking back, I think we dodged a bullet because, to my knowledge, at least whenever we were back in the winter of 2025, so 6-8 months ago from this recording, that property was still for sale, still around the same asking price. It may have dropped about 10 grand, but it was still, you know, then it was 30, 40 grand over. So now we're talking 20 to 30 grand. Who knows if the value of the property has increased? I don't know, but I do know there's some other rentals on there that he has, that he says people move in. And there are other rentals that we were, you know, hoping to benefit from. But yeah, that deal just ended up going south. So that put us around the winter of 2023. So then we started looking at the idea of, hey, what if we consider building a property? Can we build something for about the price of what we're going to buy that at if we can find some land? And at this point, by the winter, in terms of the relocation side, the state still had no idea what the hell was going on. So we were like, you know what, if we can find some land that we can buy, it seems to me like we have the time to be able to sit down, design something once we have the land, and then get that ball rolling. And then we don't have to necessarily, there's clearly timelines involved, but we don't have to feel that we have to fix anything. We can make everything that we want it. So when it's up, we're good to go. So comes around towards the summer of 2023, almost a year at this point, and we do find about an acre of land that we're really happy with. The price is great. Location is pretty solid. And we're thinking, you know what, we're gonna make an offer on this. And so we make an offer. It wasn't our lowest lowball offer, but we came about 10 or 12%, I think, under the asking price, and they immediately accepted it. So then we start working on the closing aspect of purchasing this acre of land. It was already zoned correctly. I already did a little bit of research in terms of, like, are there hookups on, you know, is there electric and water and all this stuff? Everything's good on that perspective. Meeting with the contractor. So we purchased this property and we think, okay, we've got something going. So once we get that, this ends up being the early fall of 2023, almost 2 years ago from this recording. And we started doing some of the work in terms of getting design work done and figuring out what to do, kind of lay things out in the grass, figure out what the building's going to look like. We draw up this almost 10,000 square foot facility with bathrooms, showers, office areas, an extra spare room that we can rent for either chiro or PT or massage therapy. And we hit another snag in the road. The state approved everything. We get to the city side of it, and the city says that we've got to redo our parking. So we go through that aspect. We had to revariance that. That is a process in of itself, to where not you have to ask your surrounding property owners if they are against you changing the variance of the parking. And I don't know what the exact numbers are off the top of my head. All I know is that for the square footage that we had, they were going to try to make us force us to have 50 parking spots. If you've never been to Thirst, we never have 50 cars in our parking lot, let alone 50 people, except for whenever we have a powerlifting meet. And that is an exception. And that's not something that you're going to build a parking lot around as a one time a year event for one day, right? You're not going to do that. So we talk to the city a little bit and we figure out, okay, we could get by with 25 parking spots. So let's eliminate the parking spots down. We fill out the variance paperwork. We submit everything. We write these professional letters to all of our adjacent property owners. This is what we're wanting to do. We're only wanting to change the variance of the parking. So the city says that we have to have this much because of the square footage. We want to have less. If you have an issue with it, you have to write a letter to the city. You basically fill everything out for them. I mean, I had to fill everything out for them. All they have to do is write on a piece of paper why they don't want it. Then you're given a date. You go to the city courthouse. You go to this variance meeting, and essentially you talk to the councilman and say, hey, this is why I don't need this. This is, you basically give a in-person explanation of why you're wanting to revariance whatever you're trying to revariance. And they give us a green light. It's okay. We understand. We know what you do for the community. Our business name was semi-familiar. They knew what we did. They understood that we were not like a Planet Fitness or a, you know, Anytime Fitness or a Mega Globo Gym, anything like that, that we were primarily, essentially, we're a personal training studio on steroids. And so gave us a green light on that. Okay, so parking's good. Things start going down. Then it goes out to engineering. Well, this is where we really, pardon my language, this is where we really got fucked. So apparently, this is part of a state code, but also a city thing, is that it states that if you're in city limits, you have to have a water main front your property. And so what that means is that you have to essentially have a water main somewhere on one of the front-facing aspects of your property, depending upon how your property is laid out and what you're going to be building. And so for us, that meant that the water main was going to have to be on the south side or on the west side of the property, because the building was going to face, the front was going to face the west. And so you could put it on either one of those for whatever reason. I don't know why. Well, because there's no water main, that means that apparently now it's my responsibility to put a water main for the greater good of the community. And from doing some digging now, this happens to be later after the fact, but that water main is mainly for a fire emergency, that if there is something going on, the fire department can hook up to that and have access to a buttload of water on demand. And that was not on this property, because initially when we looked at it, the water main was across the street, a very small side street. It was going to be less than a 25-foot draw to get to that water main. And our contractor was like, yep, we can do it. Plumber said that they can do it. It was all going to be okay. So we're like, okay, that's what we're going to hook up to. Well, it turns out that because of whatever code, law, whatever it is, says that we couldn't do that. And I called everybody. I don't like to say that I have connections in Terre Haute, because I certainly do not. But I do know some people, and tried to make some phone calls and tried to figure out like a reasonable, you know, understanding and option here, that we weren't going to have to build a water main. And to give you an idea, the reason we weren't wanting to build a water main was, one, we were going to have to dump, we were already dumping thousands of dollars into the engineering design of the parking lot, because it needed to have drainage. Because for whatever reason, the way the soil is, it needed to have a way that the parking lot could drain effectively because of how many spaces it was. So we were already paying for all that. Then comes this water main thing, and the engineering department is like, yeah, you're going to have to do this. And the cheapest this is going to be about 60 grand. That long end is going to be probably closer to 200 grand to put in this water main. And I'm like, why, how, there's no way that I can afford that on top of trying to do the building and what I'm paying you, like all this money that's just hemorrhaging at this point. there's no way that I can build a 60 to a quarter million. First of all, those are two drastically different numbers regardless, but also for the greater good of the community for a fire hookup. If this is something, not going to try to get too political here, but if this is something that is being mandated or asked upon by the city and or the state, to me, it feels like that should be an expense that they're willing to incur. Now, because I'm willing to build on it, but they're saying it's mine. And they do say, hey, well, you can get reimbursed on this over, I don't can't remember what it is, 50%, 40%, whatever it was, from your water and your sewage bill. So essentially they're saying, hey, you're not going to have a water or sewage bill for a very long time. Well, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't give me any money back in my pocket. It doesn't change the fact that we were going to have to drop $60,000 to $200,000 of money into this water main. And that's basically where that has ended up. There's nothing has happened with that property. We wasted thousands of dollars on the engineering side just to be told that we basically couldn't build a structure on there unless we were wanting to do this, because we just flat out cannot afford to put $60,000 to $200,000 into the ground to get water to something. It just does not make sense from our perspective. So we're still keeping our eye out for stuff. We're not sure what's going to happen. And lo and behold, we get a phone call while Adrian's appendix ruptured, mind you. We were still looking at properties. I almost even getting ahead of myself here. We even found another property. This one was not in city limits. This happened to be probably winterish, early springish of 2025. So we're talking a year and a half-ish after we bought that property, the acre of land, found a building that we're very hopeful for. The price was amazing. By the time we went to look at it, like I was in the county, so we weren't going to have to deal with any of the city laws. We get in the building and it's just like gutted. Some stuff was taken care of, but I mean, there was literally gravel inside from where they didn't finish doing the paving and the concrete foundation, whatever you want to call it. Come to find out, there's no sewage hooked up. There's no toilets hooked up. The water and everything is like ran. It's basically just not hooked up, but there wasn't even a septic tank. Doing some research on that and what that was going to cost and have it fingering out into the land. We're like, this could work, but from all intents and purposes of everything that we added up, it was going to come out to about what we were going to have to do. The purchase price plus the plans and getting everything operational. Basically getting it to where we can move in and do business was going to add up to being more than the property that we owned and the building we were going to build on. We're like, well, that doesn't make sense for a building that's already 15 years old. That doesn't make sense. And it was smaller. So that didn't make sense. But also, by the time we were doing all the research and trying to figure out all the zoning things and whatever, somebody made an offer on it and it went pending. And so maybe a blessing in disguise. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be or what it has become. I kind of forgot about it. It was a little more down south. It was closer to our house. That was kind of a perk we were looking at. But basically, we had to start looking again, and this is where we speed up to where, again, Adrian's appendix burst. We're looking at stuff, and sure enough, I get a phone call that, hey, the relocation stuff is on. Your 90-day window is ticking to relocate. So think about that. We have nothing. We have nowhere to go. So call my real estate agent. Hey, we are in a bind. We got 90 days to find something. At least the for sure 90 days that they can't kick us out. So the way the paperwork is worded, the state provides us a minimum of 90 days to where even the city can't kick us out of our space. It's kind of like their grace period to let you get somewhere. So lo and behold, started doing some more research. I started doing some cool stuff. My realtor's doing some stuff. We found a building that we're currently in now. Price was less than what we were going to spend with all that new stuff. It's a little bit smaller than what we wanted, right around 5,000 square feet, but had showers, had bathrooms, had a full kitchenette, had a fenced-in backyard area. It had an open, relatively open floor plan, high enough ceilings, some parking out front. So we're like, let's go take a look at this. So we take a look at this property. Adrian's in the hospital. lots of red flags, nothing taken care of from a fire perspective, electric all over the place. Things are just hooked up to the breakers. I'm not going to go into too much crazy detail of all that, but it was just a disaster. Call a buddy of mine that does fire inspections. Come look at it with me. Let me know what he thinks before we even consider making an offer. And he comes and looks at things, and he's like, yeah, you've got a couple thousand dollars worth of work, at least electrical and fire perspective, because the fire code is nowhere near being up to code. So getting all that done, meet with electricians, talk to some people about knocking down some walls, and we kind of figure out what it's going to cost to get this building right. So after Adrienne gets out of the hospital, she comes and looks at it with me, and we think that, hey, this is probably going to be the best offer that we can find. Going to be tight, but it's got a lot of things that we wanted. It suited our needs. It was in our budget. So we started making headway on that. Made an offer. Again, not a lowball offer, but an offer I thought that they would take. And they did take it. And then we get the process rolling of purchasing the property and getting the appraisal and doing all that. Get that all taken care of. And turns out that we did a good job of what we offered. Walked into some equity. It was ended up being worth more than I was asking. But also on top of that, we undercut his asking price as well. So, you know, we walked into some positive equity right off the get-go, which is fantastic from a real estate perspective. And started getting electrician work done and knocking some of the walls down and doing all those little things, getting the fire code up. And lo and behold, here we are. We are in our new space. We are operational. We are open. We have all our equipment moved over. It was a headache of a process. So as you can see, this journey sucked. It was not enjoyable. We went through a lot of hurdles over these past couple of years and trying to figure out what was going to be best for us. So I kind of got an outline here, some things that I thought would be beneficial to answer, just in case if you happen to be wondering kind of what was going on. But that is our story of where we are now. And so the first thing I kind of talk about is the biggest financial challenges of this is that, number one, we have wasted, and I mean, I talked about hemorrhaging money. We have wasted thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars during this process. Some of it our own fault, some of it not our fault. It is what it is. And it really sucks. And I'm not trying to cry or ask for sympathy, but me and my wife are certainly not wealthy people. If you know us, we do not have like super lavish things. We've got a pretty normal house. We both have fairly new but nice cars, but we take care of the cars that we have. You know, we don't have beaters, but we buy our cars to have them for a long time. We try to take our money and invest it into the business, right? We do those things. We're not on like a 5,000 square foot house and, you know, $500,000 house. That is not who we are and what we have. So these numbers that we were seeing were very shocking, and, you know, we are pulling a lot of financial resources that we can to be able to make this happen. So there were a lot of financial challenges, and there still are. There probably will be for a couple of years until this is all completely sorted out from the recompensation side of going through this move. The relocation aspect, how it affects our lease mortgage situation. So we are paying more than what we were for less space. We lost about 1,200 to 1,300 square foot of space, especially when you start factoring in the gym floor aspect of it. We for sure lost that much space from a gym floor perspective. But again, you know, we also unfortunately got it at a bad time from an interest rate perspective. You know, there's a lot of questions of what's going on from a government side and a political side that we don't know of, but we were forced out to be able to do this. So the only benefit, though, is that the way the mortgage side of it works is that it's a 20-year, five-year ARMs, and that's just the bank that we go with. I'm not sure if there's other places to go, but from what I've learned through this process is that 20 years is the longest your mortgage can go, and the five-year ARM is just the way that it happens to be, and that your interest rate will change after 5 years. So our fingers are crossed that maybe we bought it at the worst time from an interest rate perspective, but over the next 5 years, if interest rates go down, then we'll see our payment go down. So we could potentially save us there pretty substantially considering how high the interest rates were when we happened to purchase it. in terms of the insurance side, that actually ended up being a blessing in disguise, insuring the building and property and tying that together with how the business insurance works comes out to be about the same. So it ends up being about a wash, but now we actually have the property insured as well, not just the contents and the way that we do business. So that part of it was kind of a win-win on that side of things. Taxes are also going to be very comparable as well. We're basically counting that as a wash as well. Now taxes can obviously change from year to year, and that is a thing that we will have to deal with, obviously, again. But at least from a tax perspective, again, it is our property. It is not somebody else's. So we're putting that equity into our own pocket, so to speak. The costs, I want to talk about the costs in terms of moving a gym, the equipment, build out, permits, all that I talked about. It is a lot. Now, part of the compensation package that we get is that because of the eminent domain, we have two options. Option number one was that they can move our contents and everything for us, or we can take the money. And the money means they have to get at least two bids of what it costs to relocate it. And then I can just take a check for that money and I can keep that money and move everything myself. Or I can take that money to go hire some people to try to find somebody to do less, and I can keep the cash difference. Well, me and Adrian just took the bids that came into the state to do it, to move the equipment. We were not willing to hassle with that. If you know the amount of shit that we have in terms of gym equipment and how heavy it is, we just elected to have them move it for us. I think that was the best thing that we could have did. Some of the build out stuff, the fire side was actually not that expensive. The permitting side is all on the contractors. So that's probably gets passed down to me, but there's nothing out of my pocket there. But obviously knocking down some walls and running electrical and things like that, turning on utilities, that all begins to add up very quickly. So we're talking thousands of dollars there. Again, I can apply these to get reimbursed, but you still got to have the money to pay up front before you can get it back. So we'll be waiting for hopefully some checks to come in the mail over the next several 3 to 6 months. I don't even know how long it's going to take. I will be amazed if I see them by the end of 2025, upon this recording in October of 2025. The compensation aspect in terms of the eminent domain, I've kind of talked about that. Those are the big things. They will also compensate me for some of my time up to like $3,000. It's not worth it considering it's been a three-year process. I mean, I'm still going to fill out the sheet and max out what I can get because I know from a time and miles driven and all that, I'm going to get that money back from a time perspective. But just, again, my opinion, I invested way more than $3,000 worth of time to be able to make this occur and finding places and taking care of everything. But I guess if you want to look at, hey, that's a benefit, maybe so. But to me, it's not anything important because, I don't feel I'm getting my money's worth out of the time that I actually invested. How it affects us as a business and a staffing perspective and employment, like with ourselves, really nothing is going to change there. We're operating clearly out of a smaller space, but we do actually have what I call an actual livable space. I mean, I could stay at that gym if I really wanted to. I could sleep on the couch and be perfectly content because I have a full kitchen, bathrooms, showers, AC in that office area that can go out, heat. Right. I mean, I think the livable space for me and my family was a big bonus of why we like this space, because we spend a lot of time there. It's not just about doing business. We clearly do our business there, but we spend so much time there as a family and now having a one-year-old that was something that we thought was valuable and important to us. So that was a big selling point, and especially the fenced-in yard when it comes to the dogs and letting the kid just go outside and play. He'll be able to go outside and play. I don't have to worry about it. He's fenced in. He's going to be safe. And I think that's important for me as a father, for my son and from a family perspective. The way the contracts and membership aspect of it worked, we let people put their memberships on hold if they would like from a training perspective. Our regular membership side, we did not do anything for them. Basically, we just said, hey, you're not going to have anything change, though. You're going to get all your access back. If anything, you actually gained more. You gained a nicer space. You're also going to have a fingerprint scan to get to the door. We're now 24/7 versus just being from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. I think everybody's overall happy with that. And then we also gave people the option to make their sessions up if they were not going to be there. We usually try to emphasize this more so than anything else, because when counts get on hold, that means we don't get paid. And again, this is not our fault. It was not necessarily our choice that we had to move. It's part of it. We really still want the income coming in, but we did have to unfortunately put some people on hold. We did what we could to do what's right for the customer first and foremost, but we tried to make them understand our side of the situation as well in terms of the financial side, how that works. In terms of the news and the impact on people have felt about it, everybody's excited. I've not found a single person that's displeased with our choice of where we moved, how we have things laid out. Overall, very, very positive because of all the negative things we had in the previous space. So this is a huge upgrade, not only for us as a family and a business, but it's an upgrade for everybody that gets to experience our business. I think that's a huge, huge thing. From a community perspective, we're optimistic that this is going to drive us more revenue. We think we're going to be able to get some more business. We think we're going to be able to get people that are actually wanting to consider staying during the summer a little more because there is some partial AC. I think it's insulated better. There's bigger overhead doors. We're in better airflow. While it's not completely air conditioned, I do think it's going to be tremendously cooler in the summer, making it a win-win for everybody from that perspective. So I think just having, you know, a nice actual space helps you acquire more business, especially when you're in a space that literally is flooding every other week when it rains. There's no negative there from my perspective. The longtime members, everybody has been awesome, but the longtime members were offering to help us move stuff and let us know what they need during this process, being patient, being very optimistic. Everybody's been great. We've been very, very appreciative of that. And I cannot say thank you enough to those people that have been with us since the day one. I mean, there were several people talking about how nostalgic and how sad it was to like leave that space, but they know, hey, this is Thirst 2.0. It's going to be tremendously better. That's ideally what you want. That you want to evolve as a business. And while we did downsize in terms of the size, everything else upgraded. Everything else upgraded. So those people have been awesome. I'm glad that they have been with us as long as they have. We wouldn't be in this position if it was not for those initial people that helped get our gym up and going from day one. Talking about the gym's atmosphere and the culture during the transition, again, supportive, loving, optimistic, very happy now that they get to see the space. I think everyone is overall just very pleased at now that the transition process is over, at least on their side. Still more to do on my side for sure, but the culture and atmosphere aspect of it has been great. I think that's what's great about our gym, just first and foremost, but it's going to be even better now. The hardest part emotionally for me is just, you know, thinking about what that gym looked like from day one to what it is now, and how that, I'm going to say this very politely, but how that shitty space let me and my wife be able to get a living and start a family and do what we do and love what we do and be good at what we do. I think as much as the renting aspect sucked on several fronts, we were given an opportunity and we excelled with it. So at the worst, I can say thanks for those landlords for giving me that space, even though there were times where I was not happy with them and they knew that. Several quarrels. You know, somebody that's never not paid my rent on time, so it had nothing to quarrel with about me, but it is a little bit nostalgic. It is always going to have clearly a special space, special place. Drive past that in the future when that building is no longer there, thinking about, hey, at least we had the opportunity to create this business, and it went on to do some pretty cool things. From a community side, we've not really done anything to promote the new business. We've obviously had some social media stuff, but I mean, we're going to do like a re-grand opening on our own. We are not part of the Chamber of Commerce. I have my own reasons for that. It's nothing against the Chamber. I think it's just not worth the value that they think it is. Yeah, it'd be great to have their grand opening, and I know that's supposed to help support the community, but in my opinion, it's not worth the value of the fees they try to charge. Those fees have went up pretty exorbitantly. We are a very small business that's not doing anything to drive anything to my business. It's kind of those things where, like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It has to be a two-way street. I don't feel like it's a very two-way street based upon the fees that I would have to pay. So we're going to do it on our own. And that's just the way that it is. Going through some, I had some questions that people had asked me over the course of this whole thing. So I kind of jotted down some of the common questions that I got during, before, during, and now kind of after. You know, people already know what the process was like me walking about it, but people have asked me, how was the process during the move? It was long. It was tiring. I never want to do it again. That's all I'm going to say there. You know, when people are asking us what we're looking for, I've kind of already talked about what our needs were. But the big thing is we just wanted a space that we knew that our business could operate smoothly in. It was very open. We were pretty flexible outside of that. As I've mentioned, that the new location is slightly smaller, but the layout is very similar. And now the bathrooms, the amenities are the bright spot. I mean, there's the equipment, everything's still great. Coaching still obviously great. Not going to deny any of that. But I think the amenities, I think the amenities now are something that people are happy to actually spend time there, not just come there to get a workout, which to me is very important. We're only, in terms of the location size, we're only about 5 minutes away from where we were. We're more on the east side of town. We're just off Wabash Avenue, which is the busy, one of the busiest streets in all of Terre Haute. We're like a couple minutes away from Rose Holman. I think for most people, from what I've been told, our location is better for them. It's closer to where they live. It's easier to get to. It's more convenient. That is the widespread, pretty much consensus. There are some exceptions, but even myself and my wife included, it's a couple minutes less of a drive every day. And we never get railroaded going to or from work, which is huge, getting railroaded sometimes several times on the way to work in the morning or on the way home. And the actual moving equipment piece during the relocation, like I said, tiring and whatnot. But overall, I thought things went really smooth. The company that was awarded the bid, I have nothing but great things to say about them. They did an awesome job. It was a better way moving out of Bloomington, Indiana. Hate that it's in Bloomington with my Purdue roots, but you know, they did a really good job. The guys were awesome, professional, good time, very respectful of everything that I asked of them. I got to say that they went above and beyond from what I thought they had to do. So that part was also fantastic. We're already operational at our new space as you hear this recording. So we're up and going. That part's already happened. I've not filmed or at least posted any new content of me in there on the YouTube side. So from a podcast perspective, you probably saw I took a break. I needed that break. I needed to be able just to focus on the business, doing what it needed to do, and come back to YouTube feeling good, 100% ready to jump right back in, getting back on board with everything that I was doing. Still trying to do all that same stuff. Nothing there has changed. I just needed to pump the brakes for myself personally. Somebody asked me if there was a silver lining to all this. And I really think the silver lining is that, one, my equipment got moved for free. Two, we're now in a space that from a financial side, I hate, I'm somebody that does not like to talk money that much. I don't want to sound that I'm flaunting or anything like that, because again, I'm not rich, but it is business. And to be able to own your own property is a major financial W. It just is. Because think about it, 7 years I paid money into somebody else's pocket that I didn't get to keep. And now I'm making that payment. And yes, I'm losing money to interest, and I understand that. That part sucks. However, that money is being generated from clients. And so, while I don't want to say I'm wasting their money, the tax or the interest side is being paid by my clients, and my mortgage is being paid by my clients and athletes and members, and that's building positive equity in mine and my wife's net worth. And I think that's a huge thing. I mean, that's, when it comes to retirement, I mean, this is our retirement plan, our big portion of our retirement plan, for sure. You know, when we want to step away, we can sell the whole shebang. land it all and sail off into eternity for whatever we're going to do, right? But this lets us be able to do that, where if you rent forever, you don't have that luxury. Or if we want to be able to take some of that equity out and add on or change something, we have the freedom to be able to do what we want, and we did not have that. So yes, the silver lining is we are not only gym owners now, we are real estate people, I guess. But sometimes, as they say, the worst landlord is yourself. And that's going to be true. You know, there's going to be hiccups and things that we're going to have to deal with along the way. We already know that. But overall, it is a major positive to actually own your building and your parcel of land versus renting. Anybody would agree with that when it comes to just one, your home ownership, but two, especially from a business perspective. There's a lot of things that can happen further on from this real estate perspective as well, if we would choose to do that. How can people support us? This is like, to me, not really a question that I really thought much about, but I mean, really just if you happen to use our space or enjoy our space, let other people know that you use our space and enjoy our space. The best thing that we get from a business side is word of mouth. And if you happen to move into the new space with us and come use it and you like it more and you think it is everything you'd hope for, and it's going to impact your training or whatever, then I think it would really be beneficial for us that, you know, you just give us a share, give us a bump, give us a review on Google, all that stuff. If you're listening, you know, rate the podcast, like the YouTube video, leave a comment, subscribe, like all those free little things that cost you absolutely nothing, all do things to help us as a small business continue to excel and do the things that we want to do. And as I mentioned, a lot of times they're usually free, and those little free things do a lot, because when people are doing their homework or researching places like us, that's how they go about doing it. They look at reviews and pictures of what people are saying, people are doing, and the word of mouth. And that's what gets people to walk into the door. And me and my wife, Adrienne, we feel that once we can get you people to walk into the door, we can make it really hard that you ever want to leave spending time with us. So from an advice side here, what would I say to other people relocating? First of all, don't do it unless if you absolutely have to. Or unless if it's going to be beneficial long-term, like I said, acquiring property or going from renting to own, that's all huge. But man, the whole eminent domain thing, it really sucks. It really does. It's just a long, grueling process. Nothing is smooth when it comes to the government, regardless of what you're talking about. Politics or whatever, doesn't matter. It's not a smooth process. It has been a major headache, and I'm ready for it to be done. The big hurdle is done. Now I got to try to get some of my money back, but that process is also tedious. But once that portion of it's done, I feel like we can actually just move on with our day-to-day operations. And at the end of the day, I'm happy it happened. But, you know, from an eminent domain perspective, if you are somebody that has ever gone through that, or you do have to go through it, just know that it's not a fun process. I'm not trying to scare anybody or be damning about it, but it is just not fun. That's just the best way I can put it. I hope that I never have to go through it again. So if you're listening to this, our new location, it's 3950 Wabash Avenue, Terre Haute, Indiana, 47803. If you ever come through Terre Haute, Rose-Hulman, Indiana State, go through Indiana, come by and see us. If you happen to live in the Terre area and you're not training with us, please come by and see us and feel free to train with us. Get a membership, get your kids trained. I think you will really enjoy the space. Me and my wife, and so far everybody that I've talked to, really enjoys it. If you're listening to this over on Apple iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you enjoy your podcast, thank you for listening. Thank you for getting to this point of the episode. Thank you for all your support over the years from the business side, both online, through social media. You've actually stepped foot in my space. I really appreciate it. I really can't say thank you enough, because without you guys, the gym wouldn't exist. I wouldn't have the ability to talk about it. I wouldn't be able to do this for a living. I wouldn't be able to enjoy what I do for a living. So I'm very, very appreciative of that. So if you get the opportunity and you're not already, give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley. I documented some stuff. I have some more pictures. I'm sure I'll have some more stuff there, but I also got more amazing training information and all that great stuff over on the Instagrams at bsmitley. From a gym perspective, Instagram handle is the same, at team.thirst. You can see some new pictures there. We'll post some stuff once this is still the first week of getting this going. And once we get settled in our social media on the Thirst account, we'll for sure go back to its usual posting. But as always, you can follow us there to be able to see stuff. Obviously, if you're local, visit the location, and you'll clearly see in the YouTube videos. Again, if you're not watching on YouTube, subscribe on YouTube. You'll be able to see all my training footage now from the educational content I do. Should, moving forward, be the new Thirst 2.0 location in the background as I'm demoing stuff. So, really appreciate you listening to the episode, especially if you made it all the way through the hour of me rambling on about what this process was like. I just want to document it, if for nothing else, for myself. But I think a lot of people don't know all the headaches that we went through with this. So I kind of want to just say, hey, it was not smooth. It worked out, but it was one hell of a roller coaster for me and my wife on several fronts. We're glad that the bulk of it is done. We're ready to move on with Thirst 2.0 from here on out. So again, thanks for tuning in for today's episode, and I will see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.